The Nail in the Coffin!
Coffin. I'm Tom Valentino. He is Travis Yulee. Trav, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm Travis Yulee. Not much up, buddy. Doing good. How about you?
I'm all right. I don't think I spent as much time in the car today as you did by the sounds of things, but I'm holding up.
I would pity you if you did.
How was beautiful Terre Haute, Indiana today?
Oh, it's as beautiful as it sounds. I tell you what.
Your check is in the mail from the Chamber of Commerce over there. So.
Yeah, that's the most ringing endorsement they could get.
Beautiful. Well, hey, listen, I think tonight it's a good time to turn back the clock about 3 decades to be specific. This weekend marks the 30th anniversary of the release of Major League. And Trev, with this coming out in 1989, I'm going to assume you did not see this in the theater, correct?
I did not. That is a safe assumption. I don't really see, I haven't seen it since then in the theater. It feels like one of those movies they might like re-release every once in a while, you know, like around baseball season in Cleveland. But no, I have never seen it in a theater.
I have not either, although I almost did on its original run. I was a little fuzzy on the details of this, but I called my dad yesterday trying to help fill in some of the blanks, but in the spring of 89, a bunch of dads in our neighborhood where I grew up took their sons out for a movie. Let's go to the movies. And most of the kids wanted to go see Major League. I, however, talked my dad into taking me to go see No Holds Barred starring Hulk Hogan.
Okay, continue.
In my dad's defense, Major League was rated R and I was 7 years old at the time, so you're not taking your 7-year old kid to see an R-rated movie was a completely defensible position. And when I reminded him of that, he goes, without missing a beat, yeah, that wouldn't have stopped me. So there it is. Yeah, we went and saw Hulk Hogan and No Holds Barred taking on the mighty Zeus. And it was a few years before I ended up seeing Major League. This film, the budget for it, I looked this up, was $11 million. And it grossed just a hair under $50 million. Safe to say, No Holds Barred did not do quite that well at the box office, even doing business with me and my dad.
In the famous words of Jim Ross, I believe he said, no holds barred, more like no profit allowed. Ayo.
That's right. Where do you want to start with talking about Major League? Because there's just so much ground that we could cover in this movie.
I don't have any personal stories. Yours, obviously. Interesting personal story without actually involving Major League in any way. Do you remember the first time you actually saw it? And did it like, did it really like it? Me neither. And it's weird because it feels like a movie that, as Cleveland fans, and because it's aged so well, should be, I think, more memorable. Now, it's a great movie, and obviously we've seen it, you know, hundreds of times or whatever it is, and we know all the lines and all that stuff. But I don't know. Somehow, I don't think it gets the sort of, like, cult status in Cleveland that it should have. Am I off on that? Maybe I would hope so, but
I think in Cleveland it does. I would be curious to know how that movie is perceived outside of Cleveland. I think we identify with it as Indians fans because at the time that was made, I mean, the director, David S. Ward, he even said in interviews the reason he made that movie was because he felt like that was the only way he was ever going to see the Indians win anything. And it was extremely relatable at where the real franchise was at the time. And, you know, little did anybody know in the late 80s how much the Indians would turn things around by the mid 90s when they, you know, moved up up the street to the new park and everything. But yeah, I think that within Cleveland, I think absolutely it's got a strong legacy and a great following. And yeah. The
how do you think, I guess then that's a better question. How do you think it's viewed outside of Cleveland and sort of the pantheon of, I think sports movies have to be put into two very different like buckets. You need to have the comedies and like the dramas, because people will always throw, you know, like Rocky won Best Picture and stuff like that. So I feel like you have to separate them. They're almost two very different genres on their own. How do you think it like compares to general sports comedies?
Yeah, I was going to say, because that, I'm glad you threw in the distinction of comedies, because, you know, I think with just like any other type of, you know, movie subgenre, if you start trying to compare dramas and comedies, I feel like it's next to impossible.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Cases. Right. Exactly.
But I mean, as far as sports comedies go, it's right up there with Caddyshack for me as one of my favorites ever. So
yeah, I mean, I agree. I do wonder if people enjoy it as much as we do in Cleveland. I think when you look at a movie like Caddyshack or, you know, Happy Gilmore is hilarious, Slapshot, like obviously hilarious. A lot of those ones, I think because they're like purely based in fiction, they kind of appeal to everyone. While this being about Cleveland, I don't know that it necessarily makes people not as interested or, you know, not like it as much. But I do wonder if maybe Cleveland loves it more than they should, and maybe other people just don't really relate to it quite as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but okay, I was gonna save this for the end, but since we're having this part of the discussion now, I'll go ahead
on that.
No, it's all right. I will ask you this. There is, as we were starting to talk before we started recording, there's an alternate ending or a scene. There were two scenes that were actually cut out of the movie that I know of, and I think in both cases deleting those and getting rid of them from the final version of the movie was absolutely the right call. The one of them was going to be a wedding scene between Jake Taylor and Rene Russo's character, and I have no clue how they would have, that would have had to have run like during the credits or something, because I don't know how you end that movie on any other note,
right,
other than
how you actually tie it really on the field. Story, right.
That would have been weird. And as far as I know, there's no footage of that anywhere. That's not floating around on YouTube. The other one that is on YouTube, and I'll link to it in the show notes, and it's the one you know about, is the scene where the owner, Rachel Phelps, basically invented Moneyball, and it's revealed that the whole thing about making the team terrible on purpose was by design, and she actually believed in these players all along, and Lou Brown was the right manager to guide these guys, and she was basically acting like the worst person in the world just to try to give them all something to rally around. Had that scene actually been included, does this movie get remembered as well as it does?
It's easy to look at it now after, you know, having watched it so many times and connecting with it the way that we have already, and say that would completely ruin the movie. But I think that's probably, I don't know. Yes, I think that's a worse version. I don't know that in the grand scheme, though, it would have taken away from the rest of the movie, really.
See, I think it absolutely would have.
It's easy to say that looking at it, but I have a feeling if that was in there the whole time, you'd still love the movie. If you enjoyed it up to that point, you'd still enjoy it.
I think like you'd still have all the funny lines, and I'm sure we'll run through a bunch of them as we go along here, but I don't think the story itself in the film holds up nearly as well. I think that would have, because if you watch that scene, her tone and everything is so out of kilter with everything else. It is so disjointed, and you know, watching it now, I mean, obviously it's a different perspective having seen, you know, what actually ended up being the final cut, but it's so out of place. I don't know how that ever would have played well. And it's not a surprise to me at all that their test audiences and the screenings that they had before the movie was released, they crapped all over it and kind of forced them to reshoot the ending and change gears there.
Yeah, I think they definitely made the right decision. I think that's kind of easy to say because she was such a hateable character that it kind of, I don't know, why would you want to ruin that? Like, exactly. I'm a big fan of like terrible characters. I think they add just as much to movies as the really likable ones. So I think having those two sides going against each other definitely, you know, wraps the whole thing up pretty well.
She was the villain of the story. I mean, have the 100%. Yankees as no the question. Team that were, you know, beating the Indians for the whole movie.
They were
movie
kind of in the way, end. But right. No, but yeah. I'm with you. I think it's definitely the better version. I'm glad that they listened to the test audiences back then, because you watch it now, if you watch that scene, and it is on, I think it's on the version I have on DVD, actually. You watch it and you're just like, oh, what is this? Like, this is awful. It's, I don't know. I'm never really good at saying, what would I think if this thing was completely different? I never really trust my judgment. In my head, I say, yeah, that would really ruin the movie for me, but maybe not. I don't know.
You know who's not awful? Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle.
Oh, he's unstoppable. He is unstoppable. Like, and like, I don't know. I know that a vast majority of his lines were pretty much just made up on the spot. Like, they got him there and they're just like, just go for it. And literally all of them are perfect.
Yeah, the director, I was reading up on this before we jumped on here. The director had asked him to play this role based on his work in the Miller Lite commercials of the 80s and his role on Mr. Belvedere. And according to IMDb, and I didn't find this anywhere else, so I'm a little skeptical, this director didn't even know that Uecker had been doing play-by-play for the Brewers for 20 years at this point. And he just liked him from his acting work.
He just liked what he had seen out of him.
Right. So anyway, whether that part of the story is true or not, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, most of his lines in that movie were improv, and they would. And what was also was really interesting, they shot this in Milwaukee for the most part. And, you know, he was working for the Brewers. I think he still works for the Brewers as a radio play-by-play guy. But they basically shot it over 6 weeks in Milwaukee after Brewers games. They'd clear out the stadium, bring the film crew in, start shooting the baseball scenes. When Uecker was recording his lines, there was no action going on in the field, and he was only given very rough parameters
on. This just happened. Now
exactly.
Go.
That was that's like literally exactly what it was, where they would tell him, all right, so Charlie Sheen's character here is struggling to throw strikes. Team's been, you know, scores this, blah, blah, blah. Go with it. And he just started telling stories from when he was actually playing and things that he's heard guys say in the clubhouse and in the dugouts. And like, the more he did with it, there was like one scene where I think he like dabbed some like Jack Daniels behind his ears or something. That was another one that was like totally him on his own, not written into the script. And they basically just gave him free run to do what he wanted. And just phenomenal.
I feel like there's gotta be, for as many good lines as he has in the movie, there's got to be 50 more that made it to the cutting room floor that are just as good.
Oh yeah,
like that would be the thing, in my opinion, that would be the thing to put on a DVD, like all of this random shit, just stream of consciousness from Bob Uecker for a half hour.
Do you have any favorite lines with
I don't remember the exact one, but he says something about, I think, Serrano like administering CPR. It's this long thing. And I mean, there's just a bit outside and all those, you know, the ones that everyone knows, but there's one, I wish I could remember exactly what it is, but he says something about like administering, I think doubling off of a bird. And then I think Monty, the color guy, is like, well, at least the bird survived. And Euchre's like, to hell with it. It's just a flying rat or something like that. I wish I could remember the exact thing, but it's one of those ones that I hear it. It's so like subtle. It's not as quotable because it's kind of long. But as you listen to it, you're like, what the hell is going on here? And you can just picture him going through it in his head.
The scene when Serrano hits the bird, that's the sequel, right?
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm off.
Yeah, but yeah, I will say that as awful as Major League Two was, Bob Uecker almost single-handedly,
still great in that.
He was
still great in that. still at his curveball.
Serrano's going to need a rocket up his ass to catch that one. Yeah, that, no, I loved some of his lines describing the Yankees. He was talking about the closer that comes in, the Duke. He was overpowering down the stretch. This guy once threw at his own kid in a father-son game. And then Pete Vukovich was playing Clue Haywood. And the irony of that was he was this big power hitter in the movie, and his actual playing career in Major League Baseball, he never hit a home run once. He was a pitcher, and he only spent like 3 years in the American League. But yeah, this guy leads the league in every offensive category, including nose hair. When he sneezes, his face looks like a party favor.
They're all fantastic. I mean, obviously there's the one that is pretty much quotable every year for the last few years, which is, in case you haven't noticed, and judging by the attendance, you haven't, which is probably a little, and I will honestly say that Just a Bit Outside is so like overused at this point that I don't know that I can enjoy it as much as I should be able to.
Yeah, that's that was another ad lib, by the way. That
of course they all were. They just let him go.
Right. Yeah, they're all good. And here's the thing for me, like, play-by-play announcers in sports movies are usually one of my biggest pet peeves, because more often than not, I feel like they're a weak storytelling crutch. And the absolute worst is when you get someone doing play-by-play over the loudspeaker in the stadium, which is like a contrivance that never happens in real life. Drives me up a wall. So to have like a play-by-play announcer in this movie not only not be annoying, but actively be one of the absolute best parts of the movie. Phenomenal work by Uecker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know that there's anyone in the movie that's totally like irreplaceable that you couldn't plug someone else in and it'd still be pretty good, with the exception of Bob Uecker. Like he makes that movie, I think, in my opinion. He's his lines, I think, are funnier than everybody else combined, probably. Like, he has more good moments in it, and all he's doing is sitting there and just, like, spouting off random shit, right? So, no, I'm with you. I think, and he's all of them are, like, so quotable that you can remember a lot of them and throw them out randomly when you're at a bar watching an Indians game, and everyone around is going to chuckle, even if it's not that funny. They just remember it in the movie.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the players. It was an interesting cast of guys. One of the things that I thought was notable about this is the director said that they made a special effort to try to cast people who could actually play baseball, because they felt like if they had guys out there who weren't actually familiar with playing baseball and tried to go out and do things, they would injure themselves and set back production. And this was an independent film. So they were kind of on a shoestring budget to begin with and couldn't really afford that sort of thing. Tom Berenger and Corbin Burnson played in high school. Chelsea Ross, who was the pitcher, Harris, he played in college. Charlie Sheen had a scholarship offer from Kansas, and Bob Uecker said that Sheen was actually good enough that he probably could have played pro ball if he had gone into that instead, which I thought was pretty really interesting. Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah, Sheen, he actually could throw an 85-mile-an-hour fastball, and they moved up the mound 10 feet closer to the plate to make it look like it was coming in at 100 miles an hour, and they always shot his pitches from, like, behind the catcher and behind the backstop to kind of cover up how much closer he was. But between that and the other thing, I guess he admitted to Sports Illustrated in an interview a few years ago that he did steroids for 2 months leading up to the filming of that movie to try to improve his performance as
no
well.
No shit.
Yeah.
I will say that's usually one of my like biggest pet peeves in sports movies, when the athlete looks like someone who has no business playing the sport that they're playing. I think it's usually the most obvious in basketball. And golf obviously is always ridiculous, but it's funny because I guess I never really thought about it. And maybe that's sort of the testament that they look like guys that knew how to play, is it never like stood out to me that, yeah, they look like, that looks like a guy that, I never really thought that looks like a guy that could play pro like Sheen, but I also never really thought like, yeah, this guy's clearly never played baseball before.
Well, I'll tell you the one guy who was apparently not that great, and this kind of surprised me just because of how many different sports movies he's been in, was Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, he was in another, what was The Fan? Was the that fan. The terrible one?
He was a baseball player. Exactly. He was a baseball player in The Fan. And if you notice in Major League, they only show him running in slow motion because he wasn't actually that fast, and they had to conceal that. And the other thing, he also apparently couldn't throw very well, that you'd never see him actually throw the ball at any point in the movie, which was one of those things you never think about in the moment. But yeah, you go back and watch now, it's like, wait, you never actually see him throw the ball. So yeah,
you see like tidbits like that, and then the next time you watch the movie, you're like, no, there's no way that's true. He must have thrown it one time.
Right. Yeah. But apparently not. This was interesting to me. Did you know that Charlie Sheen and Wesley Snipes almost teamed up in another sports movie?
Is it a sports movie that ended up starring other people?
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I have no idea. What is it?
Charlie Sheen turned down the role that would eventually go to Woody Harrelson in White Man Can't
Jump.
Really?
No kidding. Yes. Huh. Yeah. Well, I'm glad for that too. That's another one of my favorites. I love that movie.
Yeah. So
no kidding.
Yeah.
Snipes was a little more, I guess he was a little more athletic in that than I guess. Because he looked like a guy that could probably play some basketball. More so than baseball, apparently, but
that doesn't sound like a very high bar to clear based on.
No,
my
it's
research,
not exactly. But... it's not exactly a ringing endorsement. That's the Terre Haute for you. Taking it full circle.
That's right. What was I going to say about that? Shit, just completely lost my train of thought.
That's all right. It does remind me though, and I always like. I never really think of it this way because he's such like a fourth level character. But do you follow Monty the Color Man on Twitter?
I do not.
It's I don't know, it's a fine account, whatever. I don't know. I followed it at some point. He tweets every once in a while. But every time I see it, like I can never remind myself that, oh yeah, that's that guy that was not a real person and is literally like was terrible as a color man, and that's kind of the running joke. But
well, he's not the best color man in the business for nothing, folks.
Monty, you got anything to add? No. Not the best color man in the business for nothing.
You can't say goddamn on the air. Nobody's listening anyway.
That's an impressive performance, because if you were sitting next to him, you'd be laughing the entire time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's you. I don't know how you don't break during when Euchre's going out on those tangents of his. But speaking of, you can't say goddamn in there. There were a lot of things in Major League that you can't say on basic cable, and yet this movie has become one of the go-to staples of weekend programming on Comedy Central and other cable stations. But they always have to dub out the lines. I think my favorite one has to be with Dorn on the mound with Rick Vaughn at the end.
It's cut through the crap, Vaughn. I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this guy out.
That's pretty... I'll be honest. Sometimes if they do it really badly... it's a lot better than if they try to do it well.
That's, I think, what like adds a layer of charm to watching it, is you can clearly see that there's something else being said there, and they're not even trying to be remotely subtle about.
You can still read his lips, and you know exactly what he says.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's pretty good. I'll be honest, I haven't seen it on Comedy Central, at least not memorably. I own it on DVD, so if I do, I actually, this is the first year I was not able to watch it on opening day. I always watch it on the morning of opening day every year, and I've probably done it for 10, 12 years now. I can't remember last time I didn't do it, but this year I was tied up and unable, so that was kind of a bummer.
Great tradition you have there, though.
It is.
You
know, it is a great tradition. You're probably not alone. Also brings me to a point we haven't touched on yet. How great is Burn On, the opening song? Randy Newman. Fantastic. Fantastic song.
It's a great pick. It fits the moment perfectly well.
It's not like getting you pumped up or anything like you always hear in sports movies, right? It's not like over the top or like corny or anything. It's like perfect Cleveland with like the backdrop and everything going on. Oh, it's fantastic.
That was perfect Cleveland, and the American Express commercial that they film midway through the movie is perfect 80s because
don't steal home without it.
Exactly.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, I feel like we could just every little thing. If we were to watch it, it's a great movie that you can sit down and watch with other people. And if those people appreciate it the way that you do, they don't really care if you're like talking and quoting it the whole time, right? Like you watch a movie sometimes with people and they're like, shut up, just watch the movie.
Movie meant for a sing along.
Yep, exactly. 100%. I feel like a vast majority probably of our listeners could take part in that.
Easily. All right, so there's one, every movie's got certain little goofs and errors and things that you either don't notice or you might notice and you just overlook and don't care about. And there's a few in this one. But there's one in particular that to this day drives me nuts. And I'm wondering if it's something that you've noticed or if you have any opinion on.
Okay.
The game-winning play at the very end. So Taylor comes up to the plate, signals down to the third base coach, goes through some signals. The third base coach goes to Lou Brown in the dugout. Taylor signals to Lou Brown. Lou Brown signals to the third base coach. He gives the sign to Willie Mays Hayes, and then Taylor digs into the box, calls his shot, gets the brushback pitch, digs back in, calls his shot again, and then he squares around to bunt. Hayes is stealing third, so he's on the move as the pitcher's, you know, going from the stretch. Taylor gets the bunt down. Hayes comes around, he scores, they win. Why was Willie Mays Hayes not running on the brushback pitch?
That's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you. I mean,
you're
right.
Because there's no way you have a signal saying like you're not doing anything on this one because he's gonna throw it at Taylor here. So you know, wait till the second pitch and then go. And yeah, the bunt, by the way, is also awful. But he's a catcher.
Oh, it's horrible.
That's one of those things I'm gonna overlook because he's a catcher and clearly he's not somebody who's trying to bunt for hits very often because his knees are shot and he can't run. So that might have been bad by design, but Willie Mays Hayes not stealing on the brushback pitch is one of those things that I cringe every time.
Yeah, it's funny because like usually, honestly, sports movies are packed full of those and they stand out a lot.
Yes.
So I don't know if you caught that first watch or if that was something that after watching it several times, you're like, wait a minute.
Right.
This doesn't add up.
It's exactly what that was. And the reason it jumps out to me so much was because I felt like this was a movie. I mean, it was played for comedy, but I actually felt like for the most part, the baseball scenes were shot really well. And I felt like the action looked really good. Better than most sports movies that I've probably seen, especially on the comedy side.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't know why that always happens, because honestly, I feel like with most sports movies, if you sat down with one person who's even like, you know, a decent fan of that sport, they could watch it and be like, yeah, this isn't right. This wouldn't happen.
They had some guys that were on the production staff, and I think the third base coach was actually a former player as well. So they were kind of technical advisors to kind of prevent stuff like that from happening, which was probably super helpful. And then, you know, you also had like a few of the players that were in, you know, like those two guys on the Yankees, the pitcher and the first baseman, those guys were actually real major leaguers.
Yeah.
So that probably helped as well. But One other thing that I only learned today, and there was like almost no information out there about this. Did you know there was a video game based on this movie?
No. On what platform?
The Nintendo, but it was never even released in the United States.
Is it just called Major League?
Yes, it was released in Japan for whatever the Japanese equivalent of the Nintendo was, like the Famicom or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, if you've ever played the LJN game, Major League Baseball, the gameplay looks, I think, pretty similar to that from the screenshots that I saw. I think the AV Club had the article that I was reading. There's like an opening screen and a couple of, like the menus have caricatures of some of the characters in the movie. And other than that, it is like a super straight-laced, plain old baseball sim, like any other baseball game from the 80s on the Nintendo, which feels like a colossal waste of a license like that. But yeah, that did exist. And the other thing that was so bizarre was the fact that it was only released in Japan.
I have to ask my brother with finding it. My brother put together one of those like those Raspberry Pi things with like every game you've ever heard of in your life.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, and I bet he could probably track that down. I'll have to go see if that's possible. I have to throw it in here because I will let you for sure. He's got a weird knack for finding these things like that, so I think he might be able to get it. I will say I was just looking through like some trivia for the movie and found a ridiculous fact. At one point in the movie, when Haywood says to Jake Taylor, "How's your wife and my kids?"
Yes.
Apparently, this is a reference to two Yankee teammates who actually traded families in 1973.
Yep.
How is that possible? That's not even really a major league thing, but that is a story that I am going to look a lot into when we get off air. That is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard.
I never made that connection. I thought he was just messing with them, but yeah, I was familiar with that story with the two Yankees players from the 70s. 70s were a weird time, I think.
But, you think? Imagine two guys just sitting around playing ball together. Hey, man, you want to swap wives? Yeah, okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Ridiculous, man.
Very bizarre. But yeah, and the whole plot of the owner trying to basically tank the team enough to get out of their lease so they could move to another city, that was real too. The a previous owner of the Minnesota Twins tried to do that in the early 80s, I think like the late 70s, early 80s. And then Carl Pohlad, who's like a big-time banker in Minneapolis, ended up buying the team and saving them and keeping them in Minnesota. And then they moved into the Metrodome. But yeah, that was a real storyline too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that she wanted to move the team to Miami because she couldn't get people. I guess because she didn't like Cleveland, but she couldn't draw attendance in Cleveland. And I mean, Miami's attendance is
hotbed of baseball.
Like the Indians don't have great attendance, but like Miami's average attendance is like the April day game we had today in Cleveland on like a Wednesday, right? So they're obviously not.
They just got some new uniforms and they changed the outfield wall to dark blue instead of bright green. So
yeah, that'll do it. They're clamoring at the gates now.
The standing room only signs are going up early now. Jeez, folks.
Seriously.
Anything else on Major League that we haven't hit yet?
Another super quotable one that I use casually, and I think I use it in the wrong crowd because I think a lot of people don't get it. Like I have a couple friends that I say it to, I think, around here. They're like, hey, you want to go do something? I frequently respond like, oh, I don't know. I'll have to let you know. I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. And I don't think my friends get it, but I throw it all out of the time. My one friend who's also an Indians fan, he definitely knows what I'm talking about. But it's such a ridiculous response that they pulled this guy from selling tires to be a manager. Like, that's probably – And when you look at some of the guys, they're old like garbage, right? Like Taylor can barely walk anymore.
Right.
But no, I mean, there's so many lines, like we can't go over all of them. It'd just be
the delivery of that line is what makes it.
Because the GM's like,
hey Lou, it's, you know, so and so from the Cleveland Indians, Charlie so and so from the Cleveland Indians. How would you like to manage the Indians this year? I don't know.
It's fantastic. They cast that movie so well. Like they really did. I mean, there's a couple guys on it that I don't really know from like anything else. But they just played those roles perfectly.
Yeah, I was looking because, you know, when I ended up finding out that thing about Charlie Sheen almost being in White Men Can't Jump, I went into that looking to see if there was anybody who had passed on a chance to be in this movie and if there were any like great casting what ifs. And I don't, right. If they're out there, I haven't found them yet. I'd be very curious to know because like all the guys that they got, I, like you said, perfect. For what they were, you know, looking to accomplish. It was fantastic casting.
Yeah, I will say it pains me a little bit that everybody, like a vast majority of the population, when they see like the Allstate commercials, they know Serrano from, what was he in, 24 or something? He was the president in some show. I don't know. I didn't watch the show. I just know he was a president in some show. And everybody knows him as like the president from that show and not as Serrano.
I'll be honest, I watched 24 for just about every season, and I think he was on the first four, maybe five, and it was not until probably very late in season one of 24 that I even made the connection that that was the same guy.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the two characters couldn't be any more different. I mean,
yeah, but Pedro Serrano is
like this eccentric ball player, and you know, President David Palmer is super buttoned up and ultra serious, and he's got the he's clean shaven with the, you know, the haircut and the, you know, the whole nine yards, rather than the bald head and the goatee. So yeah, I'm just one of those things, like, oh no shit, that's the same guy. But
yeah, I guess he spoke with like the accent in Major League too, so you wouldn't even necessarily connect the voice, although he does have a very distinctive voice.
Yeah, once you notice it, you notice it. But
oh yeah, for sure.
Dennis Haysbert, you're a gem.
No, I feel like we touched on just about everything. It's such a great, I don't know, I'm really glad that of all the movies, we not only have Draft Day to define Cleveland, but if Draft Day doesn't do it for you, you can settle for Major League. It's the second time I use that joke on this podcast. I'm going to use it every time from now on.
Still works.
That's my joke from now on. Draft Day is actually the best Cleveland sports movie. Huh.
No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
No.
But you could imagine it would be like if it was, right?
No, you couldn't.
No, you couldn't.
No yelling on the bus.
But no, this is a good idea. I could probably sit and talk about this movie for a lot longer. We'd end up saying the same things over and over, but we'd still enjoy it.
Well, you know what? I think all of Cleveland has been doing that for the past 30 years. So if we took about 30 minutes to do it, it was time well spent, and I have no regrets.
Here's a question.
Yes.
Is there another sports movie, or not even necessarily a sports movie, but another movie that's like completely tied specifically to a city that is like in the same league? I'm not going to allow Rocky because I think Philadelphia is too proud of Rocky, in my opinion. Like the home of Benjamin Franklin, and they're more proud of a fake boxer than they are of Benjamin Franklin. So I hold that as a negative against them.
I was going to say it is kind of bizarre when you consider how many great athletes have played in Philadelphia that a movie character has a statue, but
and like amazing Americans,
right?
And that too. And they're the most proud of Rocky. It makes no sense whatsoever.
All right, so you're asking a movie that basically captures the essence of the city as well as Major League
I think Major League is a great movie to have associated with my favorite city, right? Is there any one that you watch and you're like, oh, that's pretty damn good too? I'd be pretty proud of that one if I was into whatever city it is. I've drawn blanks. Like, the only ones I can really think of are like more like kids movies, like Rookie of the Year. Was he the Cubs? A movie I actually loved as a kid and still really enjoy is Little Big League. That's a Twins one. It's very much a kids movie, so not really in the same vein. Hasn't held up as well.
Yeah, but like, I would say both of those. I mean, Rookie of the Year and, well, I guess Rookie of the Year, they kind of tie in the Cubs World Series drought. But, like, you know, I don't even think I've seen Little Big League, but did that, like, really play off of Minnesota and the Twins? Or was it just that was the team that happened to get the, you know, get their uniforms or whatever?
No, it did quite a bit. Didn't really include a whole lot of like reference to the city because it was more of a kids movie and kids wouldn't have gotten it. But I know one that I think you really enjoy it. I don't really care for it, but I know that
Hoosiers,
Indiana as a state, loves Hoosiers. Exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's a good one. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, it doesn't really do it for me. I also feel like I would want it to, I'd prefer a comedy because I feel like those age a little bit better. Because contrary to popular belief, like, it is possible for old movies to still be really good. And I think Major League, particularly when they don't really include anything like technology based, right? It's not like you see a guy holding like a gigantic cell phone, I think probably in the movie, or someone has like a car phone or something like that, but that's pretty much it. Those types of things are what I think like age movies the worst, when you see people using stuff like computers or something and it's like, this just looks ridiculous. Because it's baseball, and baseball is basically still the same game.
Yes, that's exactly what I was about to say, is I think baseball is one of those games that has aged more gracefully than the others. Like a baseball game, I feel like if you dropped a player from the 1950s into a 2019 Major League Baseball game, he would have a better shot of hanging on than a basketball player from the 50s being dropped into the modern NBA.
Oh, for sure.
Or the NFL with a football player from then.
Yep, I agree completely. I think that's part of why it's aged really well, because the game's basically played the same. There's been a few like rules tweaks and whatnot, but generally, if you were good at, you know, if you were good back then, you'd probably still be pretty decent now. Now you might not, you know. They're probably throwing the ball a couple miles an hour faster and hitting the ball a little bit further. But in general, the game's the same, right? So I think
Ricky the Wild Thing Vaughn would probably be able to get LASIK now, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one that always. Side note, and this is completely off the rails here. Why did Harry Potter never get surgery?
You're asking the wrong guy.
I love Harry Potter, and this is way off what we were talking about.
Yes,
but
he's in a
world where they can literally fix anything. At one point in one of the movies, his arm disappears and they recreate it. But for 7 years, he's got to wear these goofy glasses for everything. Makes no sense. Sorry, that's.
I was gonna say, I've got stories about Harry Doyle. I don't know about Harry Potter.
Totally unrelated. I'm sorry.
So, that might be our cue.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But in general, you think Major League is aged pretty well, right? Holds up.
Yes, I do.
Relatively well.
I had a good laugh at the American Express commercial, but you know, for the most part, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they could have recreated that commercial with like actual Indians, and it would have aged pretty well.
Yes.
I don't know if they, have they done that? It strikes me something they may have even thought of at some point.
Pretty much every single other aspect of that movie has been lampooned at one point or another. So I'm sure somebody has reenacted that commercial somewhere.
Especially
along
in like the 90s, when they literally did come from like garbage to like the World Series in like 2 years. Right.
That's right.
And that team had some great personalities too. So I could see that working. It's kind of weird how, I guess now that I think about it, how similar like that movie is to actual Indians history, right? They just turned a sort of a ragtag bunch of guys into a pretty decent team. If they could, you know, turn Luplo into, I don't know, Serrano or something all of a sudden, that wouldn't be so bad.
I think the 2016 team, didn't they have like a Jobu Shrine built in the clubhouse?
Yeah, they did actually. I forgot about that. I can't remember who had it. I think it might have been Kipnis or Santana. I can't remember who it was. Yeah, they definitely Napoli did those. Was
involved, but I might
that might have been who it was. That might have been who it was. Yeah, that's good. It's good though that people, like, I don't know. It's a good thing. I think it's fun to have that thing be like Cleveland's thing.
Yes.
And I don't know that there's one that I think is quite as good. That was I was expecting you to have one and be like, oh yeah, that's a good call. But
no,
I'll take Major League for sure. Everyone else can fuck off.
All right, good night, everybody.
that's where I stand on things. I don't apologize for it.
I don't know what the Comedy Central version of that would be, but we'll have to give it some thought.
We have the little explicit thing next to it.
We do.
I'm allowed to say it.
We're covered.
I'm a grown up.
All right. I think that's probably a good place to stop. What do you say?
All right. Sounds good.
We are on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Stitcher, the TuneIn app. And you can stream us on waitingfornextyear.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenailpodcast. Give us a like on there. And for the post for this episode, if you've got any Major League memories of your own that, you know, something that we didn't touch on here in the past 40 minutes or whatever, drop them in the comments. I'd like to hear what everybody else remembers from that movie as well. And if you're on Twitter, we're at The Nail Podcast. So that will do it for us for this week. Hope you enjoyed this trip down memory lane with Major League. For Travis Yulee, I am Tom Valentino. It's been The Nail in the Coffin, and we'll talk to you again soon.
The Indians win it! The Indians win it! Oh, my God! The Indians win it!